Hey guys, this is Jamie here at ThinkMcFlyThink.com, welcoming to the first edition of our podcast Movie Moan, first edition of 2010, of course. Joining me as always is our British gentleman agent, Mr. Phil G. Say hello, sir.
Happy New Year, everybody. Movie Moan, the next generation, is now officially a year old, which is really, really exciting. Sitting across the balcony from me is Captain Ed Hocken.
Yes, hello there. I am still alive in the new year, so that's always good.
Well done.
Yes, indeed. Don't say anything, everybody. joining us as always up north is Mr. Lou. Say hello, sir.
Hello, everybody. How's it going? Happy New Year. And New Year. Not only did I survive Avatar, I survived Alvin and the Chipmunks Squeakquel.
Really?
The price of being a parent is a tough one at
now,
the time.
I have to say here, he did not tell us this before we hit the record, but we
no.
We will talk for an excess of an hour just bullshitting and whatnot. He did not tell us this. I'm fucking taking him off this conversation right now.
Breaking news, yes. Everybody's breaking their laptops right now.
Yeah, no, not at all. I hear what you're saying, my friend, about kids. It's like, you know, those movies, they're what they are. I didn't watch the first one. I'm not going to see the sequel. I'm sorry, the Squeakquel. How clever.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you got kids, man, and I'm sure kids enjoy it. The irony is, like, you know, Avatar is, as of today, hit $1 billion worldwide. I was about to say domestically, but that ain't happening.
That could happen.
But, yeah, they made the money back, and Sherlock Holmes and Alvin and the Chipmunks 2 are both going to hit about $200 domestically, so it's kind of weird to see, like, three very successful moneymakers pretty much playing at the same time, which you really don't see that often. And I will acknowledge that I was dead wrong about the Avatar v. Holmes battle, but I think we all agreed that we thought, you know, Alvin 2 would do decently. I think your bird agrees to this, Lou.
Yes, they do. I mean, any family movie is going to do well, especially at Christmas time.
Well, can I ask a question about that, actually? How's the Princess and the Frog doing?
Not good.
Not good.
Oh, dear. No.
It's going to barely – if it hits 100, it's going to be, like, barely. I don't even know where it's at right now. I think it's, at like, an 80 or something. I just remember when Sherlock Holmes opened, like, $65 million or 62, I think. It made more in 3 days than – I think it had made more up to that point in 3 days than – Princess and the Frog did in there its entire run up to that point, so it's not doing really well. So I guess we could say this is the end of. I mean, is it official that the Disney and hand-drawn animation is officially dead, or is there any hope whatsoever?
There's hope. I mean, people
disappear.
It was a good movie.
The question, whether or not Disney is going to keep doing it.
Yes, I mean, is Disney going to keep doing it?
Well, if Pixar is leading the charge, I have a feeling it is going to be around as like a boutique item. So I think it will be there. This medium is there. So. But I don't know if they're going to necessarily have a film a year.
Not a film a year, but, I mean, like, they really worked hard on this, and they were hoping that this would bring back that era that, you know, I'm 25, we're all 20-somethings here, and, damn it, I was going to include you with us. Why did you have to say something?
Some of us done that a couple of times.
Yeah. But, I mean, I remember when, you know, a Disney cartoon was a huge deal. You know, nowadays, yeah. for the young kids out there, it's just nothing. It's like whatever, you know.
Well, the funny thing you mentioned that is that period when there was – that was not, you know, I mean, that was only a brief time. That was not always the case either.
It was late 80s to –
Late 80s to about mid-90s.
Late 90s. Oh. We had Tarzan.
Tarzan, I think, was the last one, so –
I'm pretty sure Tarzan was – no, Lilo and Stitch did really well. It was 2002. I think that was
–
I think that was the last one that actually did well was Lilo and Stitch. I could
You're
be
probably right, yeah.
But that was it, though, and then sort of died down because they did one with cows and something.
That was a CGI movie where the males had udders.
Okay. I was about to say Prairie Home Companion, but that's not it now, is it? Be a little different, though. Not much news this week, so I figured we could sort of – well, for one thing, film – I mean, what movies have you guys seen?
Well, that would be me at my area. I've finally got around to seeing the three movies I mentioned before. I finally saw Avatar. I got around to seeing Sherlock Holmes. I also saw Jeff Bridges' Crazy Heart.
Well, now talk about Crazy Heart first, because somebody tells me we're going to be talking about the other two movies, so might as well.
Yeah, you're right. Crazy Heart is a small independent movie where Jeff Bridges plays a broken down country singer. It kind of, to me, there's kind of like a parallel to The Wrestler in that respect, because it's a movie that focuses on one man. Now, unlike the wrestler, you know, there actually are people want to help Jeff Bridges' character, you know, get back into country music because he actually has great talent, apparently. Oddly enough, there's a role shown by, his music partner, and who hit it big in traditional country music. Well, the country music today, anyway. And so, basically, it's Jeff Bridges going from town to town, drinking like no one's business, you know, nailing the occasional groupie, and then he meets Maggie Gyllenhaal, and basically he's trying to put his life back together. And that's, you know, something we've all seen before. For me, I'm not really into country music. It was difficult to get into on that. If you see this movie, you're seeing it for Jeff Bridges' performance, and it is a very, very good performance. You really see him disappear into the role, and you believe what he's doing. To me, almost just because now the guy is actually 60 now.
He
kind of actually starts to look like his Lloyd Bridges, his father. It's unbelievable.
Are we talking Oscars here, Captain?
Oh, I definitely believe this is that kind of role. Like I said, this is like what to Mickey Rourke and The Wrestler last year. But unlike Mickey Rourke, you know, Jeff Bridges has always done, you know, very amazing work consistently. And like I said, in this movie, he's killing himself in a different way, and it takes a different route. Because once again, they're not, unlike The Wrestler, they're trying to like basically say the glory days are over. You need to, you know, just have a regular life. Jeff Bridges' character has a talent that they want him to basically recapture, and it's a different movie in that area. It's just, you know, when you see it on face value, you're gonna think, oh, it's basically The Wrestler with country music, but it's not, and it handles in more of the traditional, you know, kind of happy ending sort of way. But you want to see this guy kind of, you know, pay off in respect. So I should give a chance to see it. You know,
sounds like a movie that Robert DeFall did a couple of years ago too. I'm pretty sure he
Tender Mercies.
Yeah, The Apostle.
Yeah.
The
Apostle. Yes.
Yeah, The Apostle. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Which is
but
a good movie.
I think The Apostle actually. In the because it's a guy basically trying to rebuild his life. Well, he's also a producer on this movie, but he's trying to rebuild his life, you know, at a point in a new place. So it definitely reminded me in that way. So I guess if you like The Apostle, you would enjoy this. So and Robert Duvall shows up in this movie too. So. And Jeff Bridges' songs are very good, even though, once again, I'm not a country music person.
I don't think any of us here are. That's okay.
Yeah. But, so. He sings all of his own songs, and he's great in it. So.
The suggestion seems to be that he's going to probably win the Oscar. You know, I don't see anyone else besting him this year. I'm looking at other people.
People have been speculating it's going to be Clooney. Now, the only thing is, I haven't seen Up in the Air, but it seems like Clooney is just playing himself, while Jeff Bridges is really, you know, it's not someone playing a fictional character and actually trying to win, rather than playing a realistic figure.
Well, also, Bridges hasn't won before, and although I don't agree with that mentality at all, you know, and Clooney has, you know, people love Jeff Bridges, man. He's been nominated.
The guess would be that Jeff Bridges would win, but it wouldn't be shocking that Clooney would win, because it's more of the establishment, so.
Well, the establishment, according to who? I mean, like, I think the average person, the average moviegoer likes Jeff Bridges more than George Clooney. I don't see people eating out of George Clooney's hands like the press does. Like, oh,
well,
George,
But you'd see the same thing with, you know, back when it was Sean Penn versus Bill Murray. And,
yeah.
You know, people were, you know, Bill Murray was more of the outsider guy, and Sean Penn was more in there, even though Sean Penn, you know, will constantly bite the hand that feeds. Sean Penn won.
Right.
So,
Ditto 2009. 2009, 2008, you know,
No, 2008 went for Milk. I mean, that one,
right.
He made sense for Milk. I don't know who the other best actors were at the time.
It was Mickey Rourke.
Rourke. See, that was different. I mean,
that
I'm
weird.
Fine, but I actually liked him a lot in Milk.
He was stupendous in Milk. I am not a Sean Penn fan, but he was stupendous in Milk. He deserved
a win. Yeah, but that was kind of a different battle to me. I know a lot of people were going for Mickey Rourke, but just because it wasn't going to be that
comeback kid, you know.
Yeah, comeback kid, even though who knows. But
people love that argument for some reason. I don't know why. Eh.
Yeah.
I mean, I get why they do.
Comeback kid. I would definitely venture to, you know, say, who knew that 10 years ago from this day, we all thought Robert Downey Jr. was going to be dead. I mean, seriously, we all thought it.
Well, it's funny because
that is a comeback.
I was thinking of like that joke on Family Guy where Mr. Weeds, you know, gets about a bunch of tranquilizers and he goes, "I've got enough here to take down Robert Downey Jr." And everyone kind of just looks at him all creeped out and shut. Now that joke is completely outdated because I don't think people are going to I really do wonder if people are going to completely forget, like, yeah, he had a drug problem back then, guys. He used to be this brilliant actor who everyone knew was going to completely kill himself. And now he's a brilliant actor who can open movies to huge box office numbers and cleaned up his life and is a Republican. Which I'm not, I mean, like, I come from a family of Republicans, but it's like, he's a Bush Republican. It's like, really? Wow. That's a turn of events.
I had no idea about that. But
yeah,
unlike John Travolta, right. He has not squandered the comeback so far. So
I don't think Travolta squandered it either. I think with Travolta, it just kind of naturally ran its course so much. That's what I think. You guys can disagree with me on that now. But what you're trying to lead to in your little segue was about Sherlock Holmes, which
absolutely.
You saw.
Absolutely.
Which I liked.
I liked it also. I thought it was very good. I didn't think it was spectacular, but
no.
It was very good. The first Guy Ritchie movie I liked and have seen, and you know, but it's all about Downey. He was great.
And Law.
Jude Law was good too. As
Downey,
Downey
is better, and he's better as Sherlock Holmes in my opinion than he is as Iron Man. And I thought he was really great as Iron Man. But
well, I could see that because in Iron Man he's more playing himself.
Yeah.
You know?
He is really playing himself in Iron Man, actually. But I actually am more looking forward to the Sherlock Holmes sequel, which, judging by its box office, is pretty much a given at this point, than I am the Iron Man 2 sequel this coming May. I mean, I'll go see Iron Man 2, and I'm sure it'll be fine. It'll be what it is, and that's perfectly fine, acceptable. But I'm looking forward to seeing him and Brad Pitt kick each other's ass. I guess comes Christmas 2011 or whenever the hell it comes out, assuming it's Brad Pitt who plays Moriarty.
Did he not do a cameo for Moriarty?
It's in silhouette. You can't tell.
Well,
it
it's okay. Funny you mention that, Lou, because there's a story that came out about they were, you know, doing press, and someone asked, you know, Guy Ritchie point blank, "Hey, is that Brad Pitt's voice?" And he said, "I can't tell you." It's like, okay. Well, then who is it? Well, I can't tell you. Okay. Mm-hmm. And of course, as you all know, Brad Pitt has been said to be in negotiations to play the part. He was rumored to be in this movie. Didn't turn out to be the case, per se.
It's not going to be...
Richard Roxburgh?
No, I was thinking...
God damn it.
Oh, man.
No, I'm thinking of the... Oh, jeez. I'm trying to blank. The guy that's in all the... he plays Nick Fury in all the Marvel movies.
Sam Jackson?
Wait a minute. I don't know if the history would have allowed it, actually.
I don't know. That's a little...
Yeah, it's a rock and roll version, but it's not that, you know.
Well, I will say, the one suggestion I heard was Hugh Laurie, and it's like, that is too on the nose.
You know what's funny? It's funny you mentioned Hugh Laurie, because someone said that if Sherlock Holmes was made about 15 years ago, it would have been Stephen Fry as Holmes and Hugh Laurie as Watson. And then someone said Stephen Fry should play Holmes' brother, Mycroft, which would actually be a great idea.
Assuming
Mycroft is exactly a thin guy, so...
Assuming he actually shows up in the next one, which he might, you know, I don't know.
Well, they mentioned Mycroft. Stephen it would be kind
Fry
of fun if he showed
fighter.
Up.
Go ahead, Bill.
Stephen Fry, pit fighter. I can't say it. I've got to be honest with you.
Mycroft Holmes wasn't a pit fighter, I believe, so... I mean, from what I know of League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, he was a desk jockey, so... You know.
Yeah, he worked for the British government.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
I like the movie, but I mean, they're great. Downey Jr. and Law are fantastic, and I really do love how they cinematically conveyed Holmes's deduction skills. You know, with the slow down and the figuring out the clues and stuff. It's really good, and it really makes him a unique character. You know, rather than you feeling he's like a rip-off of different characters that are on the screen right now, it makes him unique. It really works, and it looks great. Production design is fabulous. I actually noticed they shot quite a bit of it in Liverpool. Where I live, and I noticed quite a bit of the docks here.
I thought I saw you in the movie. That's so weird.
Yes, I was in that explosion, though, unfortunately. They blew me up. So I'm not going to be in the sequel, I'm afraid. No, shut up. Don't think I don't notice how little sequel there, Dodger. It did just feel like a trailer for another movie. I just felt too much like a setup. And the whole way I'm thinking through, because I went into this movie without any idea of what the story was going to be. I thought it was kind of going to be a Sherlock Begins, you know, like how he meets maybe.
Thank
how
God he... they didn't go
no,
there.
No, exactly. And I was going through it and I thought, oh, it isn't. Well, that's great. I mean, it's they're not copying the formula. Well, that's great. But on the other hand, as I'm going through it, I'm thinking, this story's kind of leaving me cold. I mean, the relationship's already there between Holmes and Watson. It's not growing. There's nothing really for me to be emotionally attached to. I know people disagree with me. It's just the kind of person I am. It's the kind of stories I like to see.
No.
So the thing kind of left me cold. But it is a thing that will greatly benefit from a sequel. And I'm game. I'm just not sure Brad Pitt's the perfect guy for Moriarty, but what the heck? He's a good actor.
He's a good actor, and he seems like when the rumor first came out, I was like, yeah, this sounds like something he would totally do, and I think he'll be fine. But at the same time, yeah, he's not the dude who I would have thought of for Moriarty. You really got to get a guy who could hold their own against Downey, and right. I think Pitt could hold his own against Downey. Maybe I'm wrong. We'll find out. But yeah. I think he could do it.
I did enjoy that, and I was wondering if they were going to do that. They were going to have a joke about the way Holmes looked in, you know, the traditional look, and they didn't even touch on that. So it's kind of funny. They had no reference to a deer hat or that pipe that Hans Landa had in Glorious Bastards. Because those were actually never in the book, and that's funny that no one ever complained about that.
Someone suggested him for Moriarty, Christoph Waltz, and I was like, if only he's, you know, that'd be actually a really great suggestion if he already wasn't playing the villain in Green Hornet, and, you know, obviously in Glorious Bastards. So that's also a little too on the nose, frankly. You know, when I said earlier about Hugh Laurie being too on the nose, and I, for you listeners out there who might not know, I mean, basically House is a modern-day American Sherlock Holmes.
Well, look at his name, Holmes. House.
Well, they don't know. Some people don't know this. Strangely, I mean, we assume they do, and they really don't. But it's like, you know, Wilson, his best friend, Watson, Holmes' best friend, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know who Cuddy would be.
I feel like I got caught with my pants down. I've never made that connection to House.
Really?
Well, no. But then I don't watch House, so.
Really?
I'm not a fan. No.
Get out.
I just want to get back to the Sherlock Holmes movie.
Yeah.
I haven't seen the movie, and actually, I'm very tentative about seeing it because I am a big Sherlock Holmes fan. I've read all the stories several times. I grew up watching all the Basil Rathbone movies. I've seen pretty well every movie that's been made. I love Jeremy Brett from the Granada TV series. And when I saw this, I was like, you know, this kind of looks like they're trying to make a rock and roll version of Sherlock Holmes, and I don't really know if
I didn't get that impression. I don't know what you guys did.
It's in no way a heresy. It's very. I really think if you love the character, Lou, you'll come out of this feeling the same way you did about Star Trek. You won't love it as much, I don't think, but you won't feel like, you know, your beloved franchise character has been spat on.
I think you'll feel safe in the hands of the actors playing them, I think is what you should say. Because I, even if you don't like the movie, I think you will completely agree. Like, Downey and Law were fucking, like, perfect for those characters. And, like, whatever, as long as they're the characters, I'm going to see them. I do question, you know, I would hope that in the sequel that Guy Ritchie directs it again, which he may not. I would hope he sticks around. Because I think, you know, you got to give some credit to Guy Ritchie for, you know, he directed this movie and did it rather well. I don't think you just hand this to someone like James McTeague or Francis Lawrence. No disrespect against either one of them, but it's like, you know, Ritchie kind of, you know, he worked on this from the beginning. Let's let him see this out, at least for one more movie.
Well, the guy clearly has a story for the second one. He must do.
I don't know if he does. I mean, there were a lot of writers on this movie, so you can get another, you know, director involved. I just hope they don't do that. That's my concern.
I can smell it. I mean, all those Moriarty scenes, if they're not laying...
Yeah, all
the
two of them.
Yeah, okay. Fair enough. Two's a number.
They must have been good.
Yeah, exactly.
They were. I mean, I was shocked. You've been cagey about it in the past. I figured he wasn't actually going to be in it.
I didn't either, yeah.
And he turned up, and it's like, I mean, by the way, you don't see him.
You knew they were referring to him in, you know, when they were talking about the person that Adler was working for. It's like, oh, come on, it's got to be Moriarty. So
right, so. So anyway.
Yeah.
So I hope you see. I mean, I liked it. I liked it quite a bit, so, you know.
Okay.
New franchise.
Well, actually, one question about that, Jamie.
Yes.
If you say, if a sequel comes out in 2011, Christmas 2011.
Assuming.
That would put it against Bond 23. What a battle that would be.
It would be Bond 23.
Sherlock versus Bond.
Yeah, and I would bet my money on Bond, obviously. Well, here's the thing, though. Excuse me.
I don't know about that.
Well, I'm guessing. I'm this is a guesstimate, though. It's you know, I was having the conversation with Peter, and he's like, "Oh, but you could put that. You could put Sherlock Holmes sequel in the summer." I'm like, "No, you couldn't." He's like, "Yeah, but it plays like a summer movie, also." I'm like, "Eh." The kind of the benefit is putting it out when it's not summer, kind of like the National Treasure movies. If you, you know,
yeah. Oh,
that's the reason.
Don't put Narnia in the summer.
Yeah. Did we not see what just happened? Because we know all the Christian values that Sherlock Holmes has. no, but what I was going to say is that, you know, we don't know where Hobbit stands. I know that they said, like, oh, it's still going to come out Christmas 2011, the first part. But if it doesn't, then that's what they're going to put in its slot, in my opinion. Because that would be December 2011. If it does, in fact, move back a year to Christmas 2012 for part one, yeah, I would pretty much tell you right then and there, okay, that means Holmes' sequel is going to be in that slot. And, you know, Bond 3 or 23 or whatever the hell we're going to call it, that's going to be November. So by the time that plays out, you know, Hobbit and or Holmes 2 will have hit. Just saying.
By the way, just this is a tiny little news story, but since yes. me and James especially love Bond so much, the screenwriter Peter Morgan, who of course wrote The Queen and Frost Nixon, he gave a wonderful in-depth soundbite about the plot details
yeah.
on Bond 23 this week. What did he say, Jamie?
I'm going off the top of my head here. It's a shocking story.
That's what he said.
That's a news flash right there.
Yeah. So let's talk 20 fucking minutes about that story. No, let's not. Let's just leave him to write.
I think Peter Morgan's stalking me. I think he has the same idea I had. Nuke M. Just completely
no,
off
M. No, I didn't want to say that, Jamie, actually. I wrote an opinion piece on ideas for Bond 23. But you in your article, though, this week, you came up with an idea I hadn't, which I have to admit I think is fucking brilliant, and I want to give you props for it. Jamie came up with the idea, folks, that actually the new M, like M, old M, Judi Dench could get killed, and a new M would come in, but the new M is working for Quantum, the organization which is evil and has high-placed people in the seats of power, and the new M could be working for Quantum, and Bond knows it, but Bond can't do a thing about it. And I have to say, that is a fucking brilliant idea. I'm kind of getting sick of the whole double agent thing, and I'm not crazy about that. We've had that in all three Mission Impossible films, and we had it in Quantum of Solace, and in Casino Royale as well, but that idea is brilliant, and I think you should give Peter a hand, Peter Morgan. I think he needs it.
I'm saying, which Peter? There's plenty of Peters out there. Oh, thank you. Well,
no.
Much appreciated, sir. It was just an idea I had. So, anyway, I appreciate it.
So you want to kill Judi Dench off and replace her?
I totally want to kill Judi Dench. That bitch pisses me off all the time. Ever since,
watch, you're just gonna replace her with Maggie Smith. You have no difference.
It's the Bill Pullman, Bill Paxton of Britain.
Classically trained.
Or was that rock and roll singer Patti Smith?
I don't know. You also saw Avatar, Ed.
I finally did get around to seeing it. I saw it last night. Basically, I'm going to go back to what Phil said about Watchmen. This movie left me in the cold. I do believe, after seeing all of it, I believe it was James Cameron reasserting himself as the premier military fetishist and taking on Michael Bay. I believe that's the case.
Maybe that's a sequel, Avatar versus Transformers 3.
Shut up!
Oh, God.
Shut up, Luke!
Oh, no. I would say that this movie is, you've heard it before, many said, visually stunning, story blows. And I feel that there were some interesting parts, no doubt. I really thought I enjoyed the I forgot his name, but the translator, that nerdy guy. I enjoyed his his
screen.
I felt the movie would have been more interesting if they had focused on him, but then they would have ripped off completely Atlantis.
But they ripped off so many other stories for that movie.
Oh, they did. Well, I mean, that story's been done before, and that's not the issue. Many stories have been done to death before, but it's what you do with it, and it's how you get there.
It's also when you claim it's so original when it's not, and you go around making claims like, "Look, it's the highest-grossing movie of all time for an original movie." Wouldn't be saying that if I were you.
Yeah, right.
That's
but I will say I was not impressed by the 3D. I felt that it was basically pushing the images forward into my face. That was the only difference. I thought I think it was the Onion AV Club that said the storytelling was ham-handed. I totally agree. Very much the allegories were all there. You know, the Iraq, Vietnam, 9/11, you know, allegories were all there, very clear to see. And that colonel, I don't know, Ron Perlman must have been busy because he looked like a dead ring. It was getting ridiculous with him. I mean, it was literally. I'm surprised if he got up after getting shot with two arrows, I would have left the movie. That's how pissed off I was getting because this guy would not die.
He literally is the personification of Jesse Ventura in Predator. He ain't got no time to bleed.
He has no time to bleed, and he got no time to breathe either. The guy's at least looked like 6 minutes. He's not open. He clearly would have breathed. I mean, you know, he's standing there on fire, and he's not paying attention to it. You know, it's
Sean
ridiculous.
Bean was going to show up at any second there.
Yeah, no, I was expecting Bill Paxton to show up as the wisecracking, pop culture-loving Navi. I was expecting that. Because they always have that with the – anytime they show the native peoples, they show that it's that one guy who's either kind of old or kind of young who's, like, hip to their ways. Now, thankfully, they didn't do that. But,
yeah, there was no Jar Jar instances in this movie. I will say that.
Yeah, there wasn't that, and there were, you know, and there wasn't any magical shaman. Well, like I said, that pop
culture.
Well,
the planet was, I guess, but
the Tree of Life, is that what it's called, or something?
Yeah.
Or
Tree of Life, a huge friggin' tree, and
that's what it's called.
I enjoyed that remark. We said that is a big tree. So
big ass tree.
Yeah, I know. But. I thought there was some opportunity. I mean, the tech was amazing, obviously, and you know, like I said, the visuals of the creatures and everything having six legs and three eyes and lots of air sacs and all that floating islands and all that, the waterfalls that go nowhere, and that was all stunning, but there was no story. It kind of reminded me of anime in this respect. The story, I mean, the visuals are amazing, but that can only get me so far, and it was not doing anything for me with the characters. I mean, I thought there were some really interesting things that they didn't do. My personal favorite was when clearly Phil said when Jake is up running around in the training area. And the one thing that I always wondered from the rest of the movie, who were those other avatars and where were those people in the rest of them during the rest of the movie? There was clearly more than three avatars. Where did they all go?
They had like an avatar school or something
Navi
school.
Summer camp avatars.
That'll be the sequel. Salute Your Navi.
Yeah. Ed goes to – no, Ernest goes
Navi,
to camp.
Yeah, Ernest goes to Pandora.
They reanimate Jim Varney, and he goes in to Pandora. But,
well, you know, it's funny you mention that because I actually kind of was surprised no one did a Michael Jackson avatar joke. No one did. It so writes itself, but I guess since he died and shit, we can't do that anymore.
All I can say is I was also surprised when they were having sex. It was like I thought they would just hook their braids together or something, kind of like they didn't.
They say in the DVD that comes out, they're gonna have that deleted scene on there. So like
braids. Oh,
I don't.
Hair braids.
Hairball.
Did you just say hairball, Phil? Is that what you just said?
No, hip.
Oh, about to say so that too.
I know. And it did crack me up when I was like when the Sigourney Weaver avatar was wearing that giant sports bra at Stanford. I'm like, who is making these clothes? I want to see where these clothes are made.
What's the future? You know.
I liked it a lot more than Ed seemed to. I think me and Phil are kind of in the same camp on this.
Well, I was saying this off air, but I think if we were 10 to 12 years old, we saw this movie, our minds would have been blown. But, you know, because we've seen a lot of stuff.
I can't wait to see what other movies are going to come down the pike from this technology because I think they can do some amazing things with it.
I didn't think the technology was all that great. I didn't see the point of having the 3D. To me, it didn't add anything.
I think the 3D
it
would make
there,
it – I'm
thinking less of the 3D and more the whole CGI.
Exactly. The mocap and the
– Yeah, the mocap capture.
The CGI was very good. I mean, and because it's CGI, you have to plan your shots. This is what I'm saying about Cameron retaking his place from Michael Bay. If Michael Bay had done this, we wouldn't have been able to understand a damn thing. Now, because it's CGI...
Like any other Michael Bay movie.
That's because the camera would have been shaking too much.
Yeah, the camera would have been shaking too much, and we wouldn't understand what's going on. But CGI, every shot has to be planned. So, I mean, once again, on a technical level, this is unbelievable. On a story level, there's nothing. I mean, and the weird thing is, like, you know, for some reason, I like Star Trek had a similar issue, but I could get with Star Trek rather than this movie, and maybe that was because of the characters.
Because of the characters, it was better. It was tighter. Well, yeah. It's a hero journey. Yeah. You know, it's a hero journey of James Kirk and Spock, and you literally see them from their birth, you know, to them becoming young adults. And it's like you see them, you know, I mean, you become who they, you know, become the heroes that we know them for. I mean, shit, that's, I don't know.
Yeah, right. I just, two quick little points about Avatar.
Yeah, go ahead.
I liked it a lot better than you guys did. I just seen a tweet here from somebody saying that a local theater near me is, they have a full house of Avatar again, so the money train is still rolling.
And oh, yeah.
I look forward to seeing what they can do with this technology. The story was nothing fantastic, but it wasn't terrible either. I enjoyed it. It did fail emotionally because, you know, there was a couple of characters that were killed in the big battle at the end. I didn't, you know.
Yeah, you had no connection with any of these characters.
Yes, the antagonistic Na'vi, the one who wants to hook up with what's-her-name.
What's the girl that plays,
Uhura.
Michelle Rodriguez?
I didn't feel anything for her, but there's a couple of shots, and like people are talking about the floating mountains and the waterfalls and that, but to me, probably one of the most impressive shots is that one Na'vi that was the antagonistic one that jumped on the back of the, I don't know what they call them, the Thopter or whatever, with the bay was open, and he started throwing humans out off the thing before he got killed himself. I thought, like,
that's
that
a good
was,
shot.
Like,
oh, yeah,
that
I know
was just unbelievable, the mixture. Like, you know, my mind was blown back in Two Towers when Gollum pulled Frodo out of the dead marshes, like that, because, you know, that was
a
moment with a CGI character pulling a real character out of water. But
that's right.
That scene like blows that scene away. So I really look forward to see what they can do with this tech down the road. I think we're going to see some pretty amazing stuff because of it. So he put his mark in the sand, got his tech paid for.
Oh yeah.
And next time I'm expecting a movie that delivers on all fronts, not just on the tech side.
Fair enough. Right. I can't excuse it. I just cannot excuse it for not having a good, well-told story, not caring about
that. Yeah, that's the thing. It's a big hang-up.
It amazes me that people are being able to look past that. Because, but it looks great. It's like, man.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. It's weird.
Oh, hang on. Just a second. Here's the thing. You keep saying this. I'm absolutely fine with the fact that people don't like the movie. It's not a problem at all. But what I can't excuse, Jamie, is you insisting that people who like the movie, like me, you keep alluding to the fact that we're blind.
No.
And, like, we're forgetting it for stuff. I'm not.
I've heard.
I liked the movie. I liked the story.
You're not. We've had this discussion. I'm saying
I think it would have helped if you had, you know, better, if things weren't so ridiculous with some of the characters. If you got a colonel that wasn't so unbelievably tough, we get it already. I mean, that point was hammered home many times of how tough this guy is.
But
I think if it was dialed down a bit.
You have this exact same guy in District 9. You have that mercenary guy, and he's even less defined.
See, I gave District 9 more slack because District 9 is a much smaller movie with no expectations in a very interesting setting. That wasn't just a complete garden fantasy world, you know. And perhaps it was because the setting was much more fascinating to me, because it's the slums of Johannesburg, which is something I had not seen really depicted much on film compared to the garden fantasy world. I mean, that's just me in terms of the science fiction. I mean, and I know it's the same exact guy, but at the same time, as tough as the guy was at District 9, he wasn't on fire, and then also pretty much risked the lives of all of his crew members when he kicked the door open at the top of the car.
Yeah, you
I'm
think
really surprised no one called him out on that. He put the entire company in danger because he had to open fire on a helicopter.
And no one questioned him about it afterwards. They were too scared of him. And frankly, I would have been too, actually. I'd have been like, holy shit.
What's the point? I mean, he's, yeah.
Oh, it's
that's
funny.
How crazy he is. And I must not have been the only one to think that Sam Worthington's accent was sliding all over the place.
It was.
An Aussie who became a Marine.
Exactly.
To try and Americanize it.
Yeah, why not just make him Australian? It's like, okay, it's set in the future. It's like there's other planets. Let's just make him Australian. Or like whatever the Australians, you know, equivalent to the Marines are. Just make him that.
They're just make him a mercenary.
But that's not a big deal. That's just like nitpicking and shit. I don't care about that.
Right, no, I understand. It's odd as to why he would do that, but.
Well, my question is, and I brought this up off air, and I think Lou's Bird wants to chime in a second here with his thoughts. Mm-hmm.
Move on.
No, but does Worthington take the kind of does his career take the kind of bump that DiCaprio's and Winslet's did, you know, after post-Titanic? That's my question.
No, because this is Cameron's movie. And the other thing is that we've only seen Worthington in one other movie.
Terminator.
And I know he's going to be in Clash of the Titans. It's a, you know, but we don't know if this guy could do anything else. That's
he seems
problem.
Very manly and shit, like a badass. But the, and I hear all these stories about how he's really personable and charming in real life. But it's like I have yet to see that on screen.
Yeah, we haven't seen that.
And I hope he.
With DiCaprio, I mean, that took several years.
Yeah,
because it didn't really for him. It didn't take off until he partnered with Martin Scorsese for Gangs in New York, where he started to branch out. After Titanic, he had Man in the Iron Mask.
Which he did before Titanic, to be fair.
Oh, he did?
Yes.
I thought Man in the Iron Mask was released after.
It was released after, but it was made before.
Oh, okay. But DiCaprio had also done other stuff. I mean, he was in, obviously, he did What's Eating Gilbert Grape.
And Growing Pains, of course.
Basketball Diaries. He had a much more varied body of work.
Right.
And, I mean, it's funny that, I mean, I can give District 9 the benefit of the doubt because, once again, of how cheap they were able to do it and how great it looked. Once again, the expectations were not there, which is why I give District 9 far more much more slack than Avatar.
And a livelier, more compelling lead who actually goes through a change. He starts off as being as dweeb at the end of the movie. I cheered at the end of District 9. Avatar, right. I didn't. I mean, when I find out that Wickus is alive and well, I couldn't. I was ecstatic, and I know it's not like a dork.
Well, yeah, that movie kept going. I mean, it kept moving. There was great pacing. It kept. There was a lot of stillness to this, and it wasn't even like the stillness I could get into. It was just,
right.
Like I said, there was definitely a coldness to this movie. Although I guess the only shot I really enjoyed was that the I call them basically like air jellyfish were landing on Jake's avatar. So,
yeah,
and it became like a Christmas tree essentially.
Can I think we can all agree on one thing here: is anyone? I don't know why anyone really thinks there's going to be an Avatar sequel. Can we all agree upon that?
There can't. What is there to talk about? You know what? The other thing I want to know, and this was talked about, Devin Faraci had done a very good story about what the previous script was. It would have helped the movie a lot if we would explain if the Earth is to see how is the Earth dying. What the hell is the unobtainium actually used for? Does it help the Earth? Does it do anything? Or it just makes a crap ton of cash? What is it used for?
I figured it was
they
the money.
Say what is it used for?
It's a big corporation. I figured it was money.
Yeah,
I know.
I guess they just want money for the sake of money, then.
Just to interject,
go ahead.
It's a cop-out answer, and it in no way excuses the plot holes in the movie, because you're absolutely right. But, I mean, we do know there is some footage that was cut out of the movie. I know there's at least a three-hour film here, so let's just wait and see what he cut out of the movie. If he did indeed, cut out a whole Earth prologue, then that's
Was a bit with Earth, because isn't the good trailer, the second one that came out, there's a shot of him in a bar or something, isn't that right?
You're absolutely right.
You don't remember that?
You're absolutely right. There is.
I never saw it.
I'm thinking of that. Because it looked like the bar in Star Trek, so...
Could be.
Yeah.
Ordering a flush show.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
But, being saved by Bruce Greenwood.
Bruce Greenwood just showed up in the second movie, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. So what do you guys think? Worthington, does he benefit from this? What do you guys think? It's an interesting question, I think. I mean, and since there's no news to talk about.
But James Cameron's movies, the star is never – it's about him. It's not about the lead. So except for Schwarzenegger, there was no other – did Ed Harris get a career bump after The Abyss? No.
Because he's already established.
Yeah,
he was already established.
Before. Yeah. I don't really think in the long run I don't think it'll – it won't hurt him.
It can't hurt him. My question is, how – does he benefit? Does he take this go further?
I don't think so, because his character was too. Well, you just didn't. Didn't connect with him. You just didn't connect with him. Like even the whole cripple thing and that, it still didn't. I still didn't form a bond with him. Ed said, I think the translator.
Yeah, it was funny speaking of that, him being paralyzed. I was wondering there'd be some joke where they're gonna take that scene from Born on the 4th of July and he's like, penis, I have no penis, big fucking penis.
Well, we have Ed here, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah,
the character just wasn't badass enough to.
Well, he didn't. I don't think he needed to be a badass. I don't. It's not that. I just think
it's not that.
He just didn't get an actor with liveliness, and also the writing. To be fair, but again, you look at his past works, and he gets the right character. I mean, like if this movie had been, it was a really interesting point in the last show before Ed had seen it. He goes, well, you know, it was Lou made the point. It's like, well, could Cameron have focused? Would he been able to balance all the shit in the 80s? I think he could have in terms of getting the story right, making it compelling. If this movie had been made in the 80s, Michael Biehn would have played him. Now, wouldn't he have been a better Jake? Yeah, but hey, guess what? It ain't the 80s, so can't fantasy
Michael
best.
Biehn had an okay career, but nothing outstanding.
That's true, actually. So,
what is the time that Michael Biehn didn't want this job? So,
I don't know if you guys just heard, you know, Phil just said, ooh, Navy SEALs.
Yeah, exactly. But I did realize one other thing when I'm just sitting there. It's like, because we see all those other avatars out there. We never see them again.
No.
And then I always thought, why did the military trust this operation to three people? You would think, and I was talking about this to a friend of mine, you'd think the military would have their own guy in there and working the other side to make sure, as a check, just to make sure they're not trying to usurp. And they didn't do that. And it just, to me, there was just things that they could have done that they didn't do. I think that would have just been just as interesting. So, to have their own, like, I don't know, saboteur, I guess, or something like that.
Hmm. Interesting.
That's the way I was thinking about this.
Okay. Well, I think we've talked about Avatar enough. I think I speak for everyone to say I'm tired of hearing about Avatar. And guess what? We're gonna hear about it for another month or 2 months. So
yeah, District 9 was the better version of of this kind of movie.
And Star
Even
Trek.
It's a kind of movie.
And Star Trek. Let's be fair.
Cameron is still king.
At the box office, absolutely.
In a way. No, I wouldn't.
Commercially, absolutely, yeah. I don't argue with that. I mean, obviously, story-wise, nope.
We can agree that on a technical level, this is unbelievable. I think there's definitely going to be, if we have to go down the Oscar route, there's going to be certainly some Oscars on the for the technical side.
And Weta conquers yet again. Visual. Oh, go ahead, Phil.
Wired ILM was also working on that.
I thought Weta was the head company involved, actually.
Weta was the head company, though.
There was a bit of a burn on that, because I don't know if you guys watched that interview that I sent you with Cameron talking about the tech, but to me it sounded like ILM did all the groundwork for selling the concept, and then once Cameron got the go-ahead, he gave the contract to Weta. So
I didn't know that.
Yeah,
I heard
it's a
that
bit of a burn there, I think.
Well, I had heard that Dennis Muren wanted, that everyone assumed it was going to be given to Dennis Muren, and it wasn't. That was kind of a big shock. And Stan Winston was involved, obviously. May rest in peace. Mm-hmm. It's going to definitely win in the technical department. In terms of best picture and director, it'll be nominated.
No way it'll win.
It's no way is it going to win Best Picture or Director.
I just realized something else about the movie. At the end, when they have those two guys, they have the translator and that head scientist, they kicked everyone else out. What are those guys supposed to do? They're screwed. Are they supposed to live
sequel.
With the Nazi? Do they make their own avatars? What do they do?
That's what we do for the sequel, ladies and gentlemen.
They probably make their own avatars, I would think.
I guess. And then
you think so? Maybe.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, just what I was going to say about it winning a visual effects Oscar. I don't disagree in this case because it would be such a friggin' embarrassment if it didn't. But the best visual effects Oscar at the Academy Awards is sometimes notoriously unpredictable.
True.
Just bear that in mind. When the fucking Golden Compass beat Transformers for visual effects, and I'm just saying, just don't consider it in the
back. You're predicting that New Moon will win Best Visual Effects.
Yes, I am.
Well, thus confirming that Robert Pattinson is a visual effect. no, but Phil brings an excellent point about this because the same thing happened with 1999. I mean, Matrix visual effects were great and all, but it's like Phantom Menace actually was pretty groundbreaking in their visual effects also, and it seemed like a foregone conclusion that it would sweep the technical Oscars, and it got a bunch of nominations, didn't win a single one. And, really?
And
I mean, come on.
It's possible that District 9 will win because it's just because of of their means, they were able to achieve.
It's also possible that I could date Kat Dennings, but that's not happening. So I'm sorry, that's none of the shit's happening. I mean, gonna be.
Wasn't the issue between the Matrix and the Phantom Menace? And I've kind of forgotten that. Was that it's the artistic impact of the effects and not the technical. aspects of the effects that they take into consideration when they're giving those? Like it's the
same.
All
I know is
acting
that
and music and
the visual art. Those visual arts awards are voted by people that work in that field. So
yeah.
You're dealing with some really wonky stuff here. So on some technical, you know, it's got to be on a technical level. I don't know.
Well, they do have like a separate technical awards ceremony for the for that.
There
kind
is
of stuff.
For really technical stuff.
Really
so.
Technical
right,
stuff. Like I could see Avatar winning there and not winning in the like the more mainstream.
That would be a slap in the face though if it didn't win visual effects. I mean, that's where I would go. Like I don't know. I mean, even me would be like, oh come on, they totally should win. I mean, I love District 9 more, but it's like you know.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, there have been some unbelievably stupid decisions made over the years. One of the classics that I will always remember is at the 83 Academy Awards, Tron was disallowed to be even nominated for Best Visual Effects because they said they cheated by using computers. So let me tell you something.
Yeah.
At the 2011 Oscars, you owe Tron Legacy. You owe them an Oscar. So Tron Legacy better win at the 2011.
They'll repay him by getting Jeff Bridges the Oscar, don't you see?
Yeah. Well, okay.
Some people are claiming that Zoe Saldana should get an acting nom.
Oh, for God's sake.
Oh, God, no.
Hey, you know what? Well, no, actually, that brings in a point, because that would be a sort of a slap in the face to Andy Serkis, because they never let Andy Serkis be nominated for Gollum.
Or whoever
played
Christopher in District 9. I don't know the actor's name. I know some actor who was representing.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
And by that logic, Doug Jones should have won a long time ago.
Got that right. And Ron Perlman.
Oh, Bill Nighy. Actually, you know what? Bill Nighy was great as Davy Jones. I'm not saying Oscar worthy, but he was good.
Well, in that case, Alan Rickman should have been nominated as Marvin. So,
a robot.
Very votes for Gumby and Pokey now.
Wow, we're going that far back. Huh?
Claymation, baby.
Hey, I love
it. I still think the 3D is it's not. It's not necessary. I mean, you could see it without it, and it won't harm anything, though.
The 3D is trivial to the everything else that was in that movie. Like,
right.
The 3D didn't make or break the movie for me.
It didn't hinder it, but I didn't think it added anything. So.
Yeah.
That's just my view.
You know, as I said, Ed. You know, I said on our last show. You know, Avatar is the movie that if you're skeptical about 3D, you check it out in 3D, and that's the decision maker whether you actually care or not. And you don't care, and that's absolutely cool. I can totally get it. So you are not obligated in any way to see another 3D film, except Tron 2, which we're all going to see. I'm going to make you all. You're going to see it anyway, because we're all excited about that one.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that also. I still think that's going to be the one. Well, I mean, obviously I'm dead wrong about this, but if you guys remember, I was saying, like, whatever's going to convince people 3D, it'll be, I think I said fuck Avatar, it'll be Tron 2. Obviously I'm wrong on that front, but I think I'm really actually looking forward to seeing Tron 2 in 3D just to have my eyeballs explode. That will be something to look forward to, actually.
It's going to be good. We've only seen one picture of it yet.
Yeah, one picture.
And that looks,
ooh.
I tell you, hey, it looks good, though. Looks,
hey,
I mean,
we had one picture going on for The Dark Knight for like 6 months, so.
Yeah,
that's true, actually.
And speaking of good trailers, I got to say, that trailer for Inception looking pretty good, so.
Yeah.
I have no idea what the movie's about, but.
Yeah, but.
You know, I have an idea, because, I mean, but I could be wrong, so.
I kind of, when he talked about stealing, I was like, oh, God, this is going to be like Ocean's 11 with, like, you know, it's set in the constraints of the mind, which,
well,
not
yeah,
terrible.
They're gonna
Beach is Vanilla Sky.
And, you know, and then steal ideas from there, and that's why the world keeps folding on itself.
Which I'm not again. I mean, I hope it's good. I mean, it's Nolan. I give him. It's like Cameron going into Avatar. It's like creatively speaking, I'm giving you the benefit of the doubt. I hope.
But unlike Cameron, this isn't going to take 12 years.
I hope not. I mean, obviously it didn't. But they did write Warner Brothers, just like Fox, wrote him a blank check and said, "Go nuts, dude. You made Batman." So. Mm-hmm. Oh well, it's cash
and chips. I still believe that would be the most appropriate tagline for Inception. What you suggested, you know, Inception, fucking whatever. It's below the poster. It sums it up. It doesn't matter what it's about.
That's true.
Longing in the trailer, though. That's kind of funny. So
a lot of yeah, it's like someone's alarm going off.
Going
oh, that's
on.
What it is? Okay. Didn't know. I the audience I saw Sherlock Holmes with, you know, did seem very indifferent towards it. It wasn't so much like, yeah, motherfucker. It was just kind of like, okay.
My brain. It's making me use my brain.
And for the people who saw it in IMAX, they goes, oh, my eyes, the goggles do nothing. That's what they said, actually. they didn't say that, actually. But, all right, we're going to wrap it up. This is a good note to end on. So, hey, guys, thanks for listening. Gentlemen, good to have you here as always.
Oh, yes.
Love to be here. Here's to another year.
I know. It's 2010 and beyond. You know, hopefully it's been a shitty 2009 for me. I won't go into details. I think publicly it was decent with a website. No, it was good. Privately, you know, it was just not awesome. So I'm hoping it can be better. We can upgrade. But, hey, it can't get any worse, can it?
Well
he
said.
Really didn't like Avatar, honestly. It's ruined his whole year.
Yeah, exactly. Damn you, Cameron!
Just ruined an entire new decade.
That's right. All right, guys. See you next week. Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.